For May the 2nd, 2025, we talk about Clair Obscur Expedition 33, The Last of Us Part 2 Remastered, The Blue Prince, and much more. Welcome to Level 541. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're rocking a freestyle tonight.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moxie had last minute change of plans, so I can't speak to how long this one's going to be.
Yeah, we're going to keep it crisp.
It'll be shorter, but not the shortest, is my prediction.
Yeah, we'll see.
No, you'd have to really try to beat the shortest episode.
I know that there is, well, yes. I know that there is at least one big game, but we need to save that for talking about later. We need to talk about not games on this game show.
Hard to do when a big game has come out.
I know, right?
Like, what else has been going on in my life?
I mean, Dennis, yeah, no, sounds like you just volunteered. What you been up to?
No, I was expressly saying I have nothing. Okay. Yeah, what interesting is going on? Honestly, not too much. No. I finished up a mentorship program that I've been doing. Like, I was mentoring a college kid over the course of the semester. So,
oh, cool.
We got to the end of the semester and, you know, got to have dinner, and that was a lot of fun. So I think I'll continue with that. Got to build into the youths.
That was your first time doing that?
Yeah, first time through the program. Like, it's something that is through my church, but I just didn't know that they did it until someone mentioned offhand. Mm-hmm. Which is, I guess, part and parcel with going to a bigger church is like it's very easy to just miss that there are things you would otherwise like to be involved in. So, yeah. Hey, that was fun. Huh. Student has, like, I've kind of run the gambit of acquiring all of their tastes. So I think I mentioned Attack on Titan a while ago. So that was, they had introduced me to that. Got introduced to Kendrick Lamar through that. A whole bunch of stuff that, I literally told them when we were hanging out, I was like, you know, hanging out with you has really kept me humble about how cool I actually am.
Wait a minute. You thought you were cool?
Yeah. Well, okay.
No. That sounded meaner. That sounded meaner than I thought. I don't know.
No. Yeah. Even on like the scale of nerd things, cool. Definitely puts me in my place. But yeah. So that's the biggest thing is wrapping up the semester on that front. That's all good. We did piatta for our big celebration dinner.
That Italian chipotle, like, kind of thing? Pepperoni
Italian
sticks?
Italian burritos. Highly weird. Ooh. Okay, they sell you breadsticks, and then what it is the wrap with cheese sprinkled on it and then like pressed. It's just another tortilla. I was unhappy about that. I hadn't really done piatta before and I fell into that trap. But the burrito was good. Was tasty.
Yeah.
It was weird having penne pasta in a burrito.
God, I guess I guess that's not appreciably weirder than having rice in a burrito, but
it's just,
it's kind of it's like a spaghetti sandwich. Like, I know it's a thing that happens at some restaurants, but it just seems wild to me.
You didn't have to do it that way, but you know, now that it's here, I'm okay with it. we also did boba tea. And are we boba tea aficionados or rejectors?
I do not like solids in my drink.
Okay, so we got one that's wrong.
What about you, Ben? With boba tea. Okay. The jelly is the one that's maybe harder for me to enjoy.
Wait, what? There's jelly? Like,
you can get jelly in the bottom of your drink.
Mm. Oh.
It's like Jell-O kind of, but less gelatinous and flavored.
Huh. So a solid.
No. That would be more. Oh. Is it
like Jell-O?
It goes either way.
Oh, no. Less, it's looser. So is that more jelly or less jelly?
No. I don't want to hear about anything in my food being described as loose.
I would say it's less Jell-O because like Jell-O starts as a liquid and goes to Jell-O, right? So it's like less in that process.
Yeah. Well, no, it starts as cartilage.
Oh boy.
It starts as horses. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
But yeah, I love everything boba tea. The straight up tapioca boba, or like you get the ones where it's got like a little it's like a, you know, an adult gusher.
Okay.
And where it's you know, a little bit of caramel inside or something that you bite it and it pops. That's good stuff.
I don't prefer to get my sugar in drink form.
You're kind of opting in for that.
Yes.
I suppose you can do boba in a like a healthier or less sugary way, but
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of the places let you pick the sugar amount too, where you just say like 50% or 10% or whatever.
Yeah.
If I have to specify, then I know what I'm getting into. I want you like, the reason I'm here is because I don't want to have to say I want an inhumane amount of sugar in my drink.
It's taken us red.
I need
200%,
my
100%,
please. Yeah. Don't make me beg for it.
Yeah.
Italian burritos and boba tea.
Fun.
That is a vibe, man.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I was trying to think. The main thing I did over the weekend was record Satisfactory with you. So
you were on an episode of Watch Out for Fireballs that came out the day before this episode did.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was fun, kind of reacquainting with that, and it was very fun seeing your factory set up. Blown away by it.
It was
really cool.
The takeaway is that I overdid it based on the responses of people. Many people either commented or just like in talking in the Slack said, yeah, that stressed me out.
No, it was awesome. I super appreciated it.
Yeah.
I love the final design of the Mega Factory too, of like having a giant like buffer of resources going down.
Yeah, having the huge huge bus kind of in the center. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great having you on. I was nervous, not because of you. I knew we would have a very good conversation, but I was nervous that it wouldn't feel enough like a WAF, that people would be put off by it. And I wasn't making special effort to like cater it to be anything other than what we, you know, kind of hit.
Worried that you were going to hear a voice of Gary, like an Edgar Allan Poe poem or something.
Right. Yeah. But I, you know, it's not out yet as of the time of recording here, but I think people are going to enjoy it.
Hope so.
Yeah. If you don't, please be kind. Yeah. And I don't have an awful lot. I'm excited because I got tickets to go see a show for the first time since before COVID, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah. Is this a stage production?
No. Live music. Going to see Laura Jane Grace in concert in Columbus. Yeah.
That sounds sweet.
Yeah.
What kind of genre?
She's the lead singer / person from Against Me. So,
oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah. Does a bunch of punk stuff. It is probably going to be the highest concentration of trans people in a room in the state at that particular time. So that's cool. I'm looking forward to it.
That'll be dope. When is that?
It's in June.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So other than that, it's just been a bunch of work. Work and personal stuff.
Nice. Good to have something to look forward to.
I know, right?
We'll have to put that on the calendar for Kay. We'll be wiped out that recording session afterwards.
It's on a Wednesday, so I think I'm going to have to figure out a way not to record on that Thursday. So I will not be wiped out by the time of the, if I'm still wiped out, what the fuck happened?
Yeah. Did you not hear yourself say it's the highest concentration of trans people in a room? Probably for anywhere around.
I just don't know what would cause me to be wiped out for more than a week on that.
Fair.
I don't know.
Fair.
I'm new to the culture, so.
I assume you guys go hard. Like, you can't not, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, hard to tell between a punk show and just aging which one will wear you out quicker. But.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. But no, I don't know. Part of this whole thing has been getting a little bit more comfortable going out and doing stuff. And I think it's fun to have something like that to look forward to. And it's like, okay, I can go to this and feel like a person. That's cool. But that gets more into psychological stuff, and we're supposed to keep it light. That's what the network bosses say.
Wait, did you just refer to yourself in the third person as the network boss?
No. It's a little bit like the baby of the year sketch, and I think you should leave. It's the judge. The judge is the guy who sits over in the shadow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Sweet. I mean, I know you guys are champing at the bit to talk about this game, so I think we have to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I will let the two of you decide who gets to do the honors.
Yeah, I mean, a new RPG just kind of fell from heaven.
I didn't hear a single thing about this until I heard about it from everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. I don't understand.
So from my perspective, this was like the same thing that happened with the Blueprints, but I think I surround myself with a lot of people who like puzzle games. But yeah this one seems to be pretty universally acclaimed.
Yeah. You're talking about, what is it? Expedition 33 Claire mm-hmm. something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's Claire Obscure.
In true homage to JRPGs, it has like the unnecessary title thing mm-hmm. going on.
Yeah.
Claire Obscura Expedition 33.
Yes. Yeah. And I've seen people refer to this as like a Shadow Hearts alike. Like this is a real throwback to like early 2000s like console RPG, like JRPG kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you mean it is Kingdom Hearts.
This game is
French as fuck.
Extremely French. All that I've seen is screenshots of people's like loot tables, and it's just baguette.
Yeah,
I'm not joking.
Well, apparently there are little like French puns and in jokes all throughout the game, and I'm kind of sad that I'm missing that.
Yeah.
But then there's also stuff like the baguette, and mm-hmm. You can fight a mime. So you know, there's some stuff for the rest of us too.
And the music, the music is all like accordion and kind of stuff based on what I heard. Yeah. Yeah. Other than it being like a cartoon parody, like what if a Punch-Out character from France got turned into a video game? which I guess there is a Punch-Out character from France. I think it's Glass Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, possibly. I think the better byline for Expedition 33 is, what if JRPGs got their soul back?
I guess. So
like this game is fantastic.
So you said Kingdom Hearts. This is turn-based, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
And it flows very smoothly between like map exploration and combat. And world map exploration, which we'll get to, but there's kind of layers for how you interact with this game. But you know, when you interact with an enemy, you go into the combat, screen, you know, there's a little screen effect that happens so that you know, that things are changing. Otherwise I would just be completely confused. So it's a good thing. There's an overdone mm-hmm. transition. Getting, you know, the heart of JRPGs just right. Like that's part of it, you know?
Good.
Oh, I had a question just to gauge where you're at. How many people are in your party?
Three.
Okay.
So there's like the intro area, the first area, and then you go to the world map, then you go to the second area, and I think I'm pretty much through the second area.
Okay.
Got it.
So you say like, oh, like what if JRPGs got their soul back? Like, what was the last game like this that you tried?
Oh man, probably like a Ni No Kuni.
Okay.
Wrath of the White Witch. I'm sure there's been one more recently than that, but that's the last one that I sunk like mm-hmm. a real appreciable amount of time into.
And Ben, I know that you played Octopath, right?
Yeah. For me, I guess this is kind of hitting in the same vein that like Final Fantasy X and Chrono Cross did, in the mm-hmm. sense of how goofy the world is, and like just like the small idiosyncrasies of it, and like so in that mm-hmm. sense it's giving me like the same vibes and the same experience as those did.
Say more about goofy, just the way that it's kind of like the magical nature plus random buildings smushed together, or the tone, like what are you thinking when you say that?
This is the snapshot that I told my friends on the Discord server is like late last night I was trying to get the party dodge timing down of an enemy that was throwing its butt on the ground to throw like rocks at people. Yeah. And so it's like, that's something that would fit like in a Final Fantasy X probably, you know? And so I think that paired with the level of detail that the biomes are that you're kind of going through, mm-hmm. Kind of give you the same sense of like wonder that Final Fantasy X did for me the first time I played that, where it's like, oh wow, a thunder field where they're like lightning will strike you. This is like a really cool concept. Whereas like here, to give a minor spoiler for one of the first biomes that you come across, it's like, what if you're in an ocean that you can walk through and the water just like floats up and, but it's still like this air water mixture that you're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's very original and very like cool, like biomes like that.
Yeah. I just think that like from what I've seen, the design of the world and just kind of the feel of the setting and even just the particulars of it feel the most original without relying on what feels like very established tropes, right? Whether it's, Final Fantasy style, you know, medieval fantasy, I guess older style Final Fantasy, medieval fantasy, like an Octopath, or like, let's say like big mechs, like Xenoblade, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of Victorian to it. But also distinctly modern within that. Like the architecture is definitely Victorian.
For sure.
And as well, the whole conceit of the world is that something happened to like shatter the world and muddle up reality. The city that you live in kind of got thrown away from the rest of the world, and that's why it's been as okay as it is there. Mm-hmm. But like basically the 33 comes from, you can see on the horizon, there's what they call the Paintress. It's this giant figure below this obelisk with a big glowing number on it, that most of the time effectively sits there moping.
Okay.
once a year it stands up, erases the old number and writes the one under it. So from 34 to 33,
oh,
and then
counting down.
Everyone that's over 33, melts into roses. How would you describe that? They disintegrate into flower petals. Yeah.
I don't feel so good, Monsieur Stark.
Yeah.
this little city that's kind of isolated from the craziness that is on the continent, will send an expedition each year, and people basically sacrifice what would be the last year of their existence to try to get to the mainland, kind of high level, like take out the Paintress, maybe that'll stop it. But also like, we don't really know what's going on. So that you're just the Expedition 33 is the most recent, attempt to get any kind of handle on what's going on in the world and maybe stop.
Okay.
This they call it the Gromage when everyone evaporates, who is old.
Yeah,
maybe stop like that from happening again,
like a Logan's Run kind of thing. So your party is all made up of people whose lives are forfeit anyway.
Yeah,
kind of. But then the architecture that to wrap it back around, when you're on this mainland, it is very wild and beautiful. Like I said, magical nature going on, glowing trees, very bright colors. And then architecture from, I guess, when humans were in this land kind of folded throughout, somewhat looking like it was destroyed, but somewhat looking like it was kind of, molded together with nature. And so it's a very cool effect that is not like anything that I've seen in other JRPGs.
I was going to say, it's kind of like the Shimmer in Annihilation, but if it had more variety in what the biome was.
Okay.
But it's very like dreamlike and it's super on point artistically.
A game that I haven't thought about in forever. It was a PS3 launch title called Folklore.
Nobody's thought about that. You're the first person who's talked about that since it came out.
I know, but I kind of want to check now. You know what? Now that I'm looking at images, I think that might be the closest touchstone.
Okay.
In fact, looking at some screenshots, these are some Expedition 33 ass monsters here in Folklore, maybe vice versa. Maybe that's a touchstone for it. But that's talking about the world. I don't know if you got any other thoughts just on kind of the vibe and the setting, Ben.
Yeah, I do. Even though like some of the environments are kind of not derivative, that's too mean of a word, but like very inspired by certain things like Victorian, the conceit of like the main group going on the expedition, they feel like it's an original art style. They look cool. They mm-hmm. wear these weird like black leather suits kind of that do feel very like JRPG. But it does feel like creative and original on its own. And I do like the fact that the conceit of the game, like, is born out of this premise of, like, what if everyone was going to die, you know, and that number is decrementing. Like, it would make sense that everybody, like, oh, well, they have nothing to live for. They might as well, like, go try and stop it, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think another thing I like is so many times it feels like in a JRPG, or, you know, whatever, in game plots, it's like, hey, this crazy, scary new thing is happening, and you're the first people to go in and try to figure it out, and all the rules are turned on their head. Whereas it feels like here, it's, you know, you're just another cog in the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a fatalistic aspect to it that the tagline of the expedition, or like their motto, is "When one falls, we continue." And they emphasize at one point, like, it is when one falls, not if one falls.
Yeah.
So they know what they're getting into. But yeah, to have this, you know, I think the game has a lot of restraint in you're stepping into a world that's been in motion for a long time. And they don't jump out of their chair to try to explain everything to you. They mm-hmm. let you kind of steep in it and kind of get the vibe and put together how things work without you know, giving you that avatar character of I'm new in this world. And yeah. So you're going to see everything through my eyes. It's like that, you know, the characters you're playing as kind of know the deal a lot mm-hmm. better than you do.
There's like another conceit that's like justified in this too, where it's like you have like a little like sidekick friend in it. But it makes sense that like, and you treat one another like siblings, even though you're not by blood, but it's because all of your parents are dead, you know, and that's just like the world that you live in. And so it's just cool to see tropes like that, like in other games, like have more justification in this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you want to talk gameplay?
Yeah.
This is the most fun I've had with a turn-based system that's not on a grid in a long time.
Yeah. The thing I was surprised by is like how stripped down the gameplay is. Like it's remarkably simple, like what you're doing in this game, which I mean, all turn-based games are kind of like this, but this doesn't like bloat under complexity like other ones, I feel like, where I don't feel like you're managing like hundreds of items and like hundreds of different side mechanics. They kind of silo all their mechanics in individual characters, but I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself here. The basic gist of the turn-based combat, you can think of the game in general as you're going through a regular map from turn-based combat to turn-based combat, or you're going on a world map from turn-based combat to turn-based combat, and you kind of switch ping-pong between the two things. But when you get into a turn-based combat, it basically gives you a very simple decision. It has a timeline like other JRPGs where based on your speed stat that determines the order of everyone fighting. On your turn, you can do one of three things. You can do a base attack and build up an economy called AP, I think, action points.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. What is this new thing? I've never heard of action points before.
You can do a special attack that spends action points, or you can use an item of some kind that either like heals or revives or something like that. So they kind of simplify what you can do into smaller options. But then the complexity arises in that each character kind of has a different meta set of rules governing their behavior, similar to like something like Slay the Spire, which is what I was surprised by.
I know specifically one of the characters is like, that's the Watcher right there.
One of the characters feels like it was pulled directly from it because they have different stances, like a defensive stance and aggressive stance, that sort of thing, and mm-hmm. that kind of dictates what buffs you get in your special attacks based on what stance you're in at the beginning of it. It feels like it's lifted exactly out of the rules for the Watcher.
There's two layers going on because every character has their own kind of self-sustained gimmick. So stance switching or building up, I forget what they call them, special glimmers or something like that, or just building up charges for like a big overkill attack. And those are all, you know, self-contained. So turn over turn, that character, you're trying to build towards that. but there's also mechanics that interact between characters. And so one character might be able to light enemies on fire. And another might have a move that does, you know, hits more times if the character is burning, or gives them some other bonus effect if the character is burning. And so no character is going to directly interact with the system of another, but mm-hmm. if you know, I light the enemy on fire so that the character that switches stances can use a burning enemy to switch stances in a different way than usual. It all kind of weaves together like that.
Yeah. So it's not like direct synergies, but the things that they do can be bridges for other abilities that people have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how you get those like small interactions. I need to Google the names of these, but there's two different systems where it's like, there's items that you can equip to people that'll have some sort of buff, and it'll have two different buffs. It's like if you're doing this attack, something happens is like one sort of effect that mm-hmm. your character quote unquote learns, meaning if they win in battle with this equipped four times, I believe, mm-hmm. then it's like unlocked for them. And then that'll be active all the time. And then there's another that's like a passive effect on their stats, I believe, where it just increases like percentage points on one of your, six stats that they have. And there's basic like D&D-esque stats in this. It's like luck, vitality. I guess it's kind of maybe like Dark Souls a little bit.
I really wanted there to be like an ennui or something. Like, I'm so disappointed there's not.
To lean into the Frenchness, some ennui.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But yeah, so there's the Pictos. In the way I understood them, and maybe I'm wrong, is you have to have it equipped, and then you get it without spending points on it. You can have up to three Pictos are those special powers that Ben is talking about. Have those mm-hmm. equipped regardless of their point value, just in your slots. Once they've been learned, anyone in the party can spend a pool of points on them, but you've got to stay under a certain cap, which, you know, that cap can be leveled up along with everything else. And so it's like, hey, you know, a balance between I want to equip these so I can learn them, and I want to equip the ones that are expensive so I don't have to pay for them, and managing the budget that you have for the remaining ones to kind of maximize what you want to do with that character.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the main...
That works very well.
One of the main economies that you're interacting in the game is like if you go into the corners and kind of find all the objects, it's a resource that allows you to increase like your points that you can use to learn these things for a single character. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're slowly like picking up, assembling these like little Lego pieces to a character as the game goes on.
I've had virtually enough points and I've been very completionist, like explore every corner. I've had pretty much enough points to have most things active on most people all the time.
Hmm. Yeah. Like I've kind of like held some points in reserve because I assume that you're going to get more party members and then like mm-hmm. you might have to pay to like level them up. But yeah, I agree that I'm kind of always at the ceiling where there's not like too many moves where it's like, oh man, I really wish I could learn that and like have that or whatever. Mm-hmm. I kind of engaged with the system a little bit at the beginning, and then like now it's just like, if I get something new, I'll equip to someone. Maybe I'll have someone learn it later, but usually I don't care that much to even do that.
There's some characters where it's like, all right, this guy is my auto attacker. He's really built around base attacks the way I'm playing him. So I'm going to make sure he has those. But otherwise it's like, okay, there's some that are just good for everyone to have. Like if you dodge, you get bonus AP. Everyone's going to get that. Mm-hmm. I've never felt like there were so many of those ones that I wanted everyone to have, or that they were so expensive that I couldn't parse mm-hmm. it out. We should talk about, so, you know, we've talked about the way the attacks, play out between each other. Whenever you select an attack, you get a little, quick time, event, and you learn the timing of the attacks. It's very, Mario RPG?
Yeah. Mario RPG, Paper Mario.
Exactly. Yes. No. So it's got that vibe to it. It's very simple. It's at least on the normal difficulty, it's only one button. So it's just timing, mm-hmm. Not reacting to different prompts. However, whenever an enemy attacks, you also have the opportunity to time either dodges or parries. So dodges protect you for longer and also have less of a cooldown. And if you get the dodge perfect, you can activate certain bonuses. Like I said, one of them is getting more AP to spend. A parry will only work if you get it perfect, but it can trigger a counterattack. And so there's a great little risk reward where you kind of learn the monster's patterns and can start out just dodging because that's the safest way and you're probably still going to get hit anyway. It's got a very, I'm amazed we have talked the song without invoking it, a very Dark Souls feel of like the enemy windups kind of have feints and stuff built into them to try to bait you out. And then once you've gotten confident with the dodges, you start kind of working in parries if you're feeling confident to get those extra damage points back on them.
Do you fight the same kind of enemy enough times to where that kind of internalizing of the attack timing can benefit you?
Yes. Okay. Both and you fight them across the map, or in boss battles, you die and have to fight them again so many times that you remember it that way.
Well, and that is part of the difficulty of bosses, is this is not an enemy that you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one I didn't even realize can eat one of your party members and just take them off the board for it was like 10 turns or something. It was ridiculous. And I could have dodged it if I hadn't been sitting there going, what is this even? Realized too late what was happening. Mm. But that, you know, that is feels really good in practice. It gives you constant little micro decisions of how risky you want to be. And that, you know, makes it a ton of fun to go through these battles that otherwise might get a little rote if you were just, you know, selecting the attacks.
Because that's the problem, right, with this kind of game, is that the combat, there's just too much of it, and all of it is way too similar to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely, it is fun enough that it hasn't gotten tiring for me, I guess, the combat loop. And it does kind of offer, like, a good amount of, like, progression to it, where you can kind of see where it's going, where it's like you can level up your weapons the same way in Dark Souls, and there's, like, grades with stats tied to them. That like scale. So it's like based on how good the grade is, it'll also scale contribution to your stats pool. So like all of that seems like a good kind of treadmill that I feel progress as I've gone up. So
Final thing on the gameplay standpoint that I want to make sure I bring up is the way they do items. Cause this was a revelation and I never want any RPG to do them differently ever. Everything is an Estus flask. So your heal potions, have a limited number of uses on them. There's an item that gives people AP, and there's an item that revives a downed enemy. And you don't collect them throughout the world. Mm-hmm. You just have a certain number to spend between resting at expedition flags or their bonfires.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been so freeing to actually use them and use them during combat, because there's no way to use them outside of combat.
Right.
That is just really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I find myself very intentionally working in the AP potions, I guess you would call them. I'm sure they have a more French name for it than that. But they, you know, you think about, okay, I can see the lineup of who's attacking next, and I know this character is at this progression in their special mechanic, but they don't have many AP right now. So instead of attacking with this other character, I'll just pass some AP over.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of do a bunch of set and spike maneuvers using your potions. I found a heal early on with one of the characters that if you do it right, it doesn't cost anything. And so that effectively made the health potion ones a little bit less useful, but mm-hmm. I still have used them in battle when the person with the heal got knocked out.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that just like, I don't want to have 60 of these in my inventory.
No,
yeah. It's going to be a drag. I don't want to manage selling them money to spend in the shop. Just make it as simple as this. I get two of each per bonfire and I'm good to go. And it's made it so much more relevant to use items.
Yeah.
We have found the cure for too good to use.
It's very good.
The menu for the game is, Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, the menu is like so clean for the game because it's not like there's a place where it's like inventory. Here's like 100 things you have. It's like only the relevant items come up when necessary. So it's like you have like whatever weapon each character is using. And so when you click on that, it'll show all the options of weapons that they can use. But it's all the weapons are specifically for like specific characters. So it's not like you have to wrangle like these 20 weapons and read a tag on it that says like, oh, only this type of person can equip this. So yeah, that's the one thing I was surprised by is like just going to the pause screen and like seeing the loadout of the characters. It's very, very simple. It's very like sparsely populated. Yeah. So it's really good UI.
Which, man, that kind of whimsical design bleeds over into the weapons as well. Right now, my main guy's sword is like fish fins, and that's super cool. So,
yeah, I forgot to mention that your weapons can have a type to it as well, like frost or fire, lightning, that sort of thing. Yeah.
This game is good.
Yeah,
this game
it sounds is real good. Really well thought through. So, I guess my question is, you know, you both talked about gauging progress by how many characters you have in your party, like how many you have found. Given how different each of them seems to be, does this seem like it is something where you're going to get enough that who is in your party is a meaningful decision that you're going to make in terms of building a team? Or is this like you're going to get the people you get and learning to use them is kind of the trick?
So, one thing that we haven't talked about, because we talked about how people have like special moves that spend AP, the moves that you have there's a whole progression for that where you have a separate economy that you level up in for like, I think it's like, it's not action points, but it's some type of points that you spend on like this grid that you have of all the possible moves that they can learn. And so for like certain characters, say like an elemental type character, the upgrade tree kind of looks like maybe a plus sign or something like that, where you can go in any of those four directions for the four elements and like get more powerful attacks for them. So like you could specialize like in lightning or like fire, but it's not like you're picking like, I'm picking a single specialization. You're kind of doing that by whichever path you go down. So I think
you can have a loadout of any six unlocked skills at any time.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been impressed during any given battle, how much I move around those six moves. Just because different set and spike opportunities arise as you are, doing stuff with each of the characters. So, the design of how these systems play together, is probably one of the strongest things about this game.
Yeah.
And so many other systems in the game kind of, have roots into that, as well.
Yeah, it kind of has like a Pokemon type thing to it where it's like characters will have weaknesses or like resistances, or you'll heal them if you do certain elemental damage to certain enemies. But to answer your original question, I don't think there will be like a single like this is a really good loadout that everyone's going to find and like narrow in on. I think you'll probably, you know, pick whichever way you want to upgrade your characters and probably find a good composition based on like those sorts of choices.
Okay.
But it is easy to respec in the game. Like there's a resource you get for it. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe you find like certain synergies between characters, like the farther you progress.
Or you could grow them into being grow them into having the synergies that you want.
Yeah, I suspect that, at least for me, I'll pick characters that I enjoy, like their whatever their play style or whatever the rules of like that character is, and probably just pick those to play with. But
yeah, I have not yet reached the party cap. I assume it's four, and I have three, but I just don't know because I haven't gotten enough people to have to choose. I've always lamented that though, when you get to that point in RPGs where someone's got to stay behind. And up to that point, you've been able to play with everyone. It just feels like, I don't know, a parting in the game.
Oh, there's always a dud. There's always a dud. Yeah. You're going to stay home, Kate Sith. I'm sorry, you're not meant for the road, Kate Sith.
That's Will in Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, Will's fine.
Will's fine back at camp.
I mean, I hadn't seen people talking a lot of specifics about this. I had heard people talk about the originality of the world. I have heard people talk about its kind of attitude or toward exposition, which is the player can figure it out, but not too much about the mechanics. And you're making it sound good. I confess that I'm not so familiar with a lot of recent, RPGs to where I can say, like, if any of this is striking me as, you know, especially new. I know that, like, Octopath Traveler 2 does a lot to differentiate the character classes and stuff, but I don't know that the progression system is as kind of explicitly branchy as this one is. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like there's any one gimmick in Expedition 33 that is like, ah, that's the thing that made it different from anything else. It's just all of it weaves together so well that it feels unique, you know?
Yeah.
Because we called out Paper Mario action, quick time event type stuff. And, Dark Souls got name checked because it has to be, et cetera. Like there's all these touchstones, but this just, I don't know, is the right package at the right time. But yeah, I'm convinced the game did not exist until the moment it was released, because I heard nothing about it.
Mm. Yeah, I would say I kind of came into it as a skeptic, because like games like Persona 5 that are also like universally lauded, I kind of bounced off of. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of a little bit worrisome that I was going to like feel like I had wasted my money like getting it. But no, I even as a non-huge RPG player, for at least JRPG, like I enjoyed this experience. But I think it's because it's so stripped down and so like to the point, as far as like with the gameplay and progression and stuff, I think that does it favors.
This has started a discourse that I am not entirely it started a discourse that I find to be a little bit tiresome, which is, are people reacting to this positively just because it is not anime styled?
Mm.
Huh. I don't know. I was going to say as a final thought, like this game has dodged Uncanny Valley in a way that I can't quite put my finger on. Because it is, yeah, it's very realistically styled, and it is a beautiful game.
I mean, French Robert Pattinson, though, does beg to differ.
Yes.
I don't know, man. You watch it, and I think the animators on this clearly know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it could very easily be one of those ones where it's like, oh, your teeth and eyes just look wrong, and every cutscene is grating. But this, it feels very natural, and the characters are all adorable in their own way.
It definitely has the goofiness of a JRPG, but yeah, I don't know what this would play like if this was like anime style, if it would be the same experience or not.
Oh, I'm just talking visually. Like I also saw somebody describe this as like Persona 5 for people who don't like the way Persona 5 looks.
Mm.
I think that there's a lot of defensiveness out of things that are especially anime coded, and that has been so the anime visual, right? Kind of style, and kind of playing in some of those tropes. I'm not generalizing, but like, you know, that has been the dominant form for a very long time between Xenoblade and Persona, you know, very specifically. I think that there's a certain amount of people may be wondering why everybody is raving about this thing, and maybe trying to cast out at least the one thing that is most obviously different about it.
I think I would definitely disagree with that take, because like even comparing like the first like X hours that I played a Persona 5, it's like it's so much more streamlined in Expedition 33, where it's like you're not like in Persona 5, like they spend a long time introducing you to settings that you spend a lot of repeated time in, and you're not making drastically meaningful decisions in it. You're just kind of doing busy work, it feels like to me, at least in certain portions. Whereas here, it's like you never spend too long in the same place, but all the places you're in are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And and the RPG system, again, it's just so much more streamlined and not as fiddly. So.
Does it get you into the action quickly?
There's a bit of a, I think, easing into it, I would say. Like
the first area is very clearly tutorials and story setup.
Yeah.
But the story is very well done. By the way, Andy Serkis is in this. Hello.
Huh.
The time spent tutorializing and introducing you to characters, et cetera, is not wasted, and it pays. It feels like they are, very intentionally building up to a payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's probably like maybe a half an hour, an hour into the game where you start a level, and that's like the start of the game proper, I would say. Mm. So.
play this game. You will love it.
Yeah.
It will give you happy dopamine just from the scenery.
I mean, it definitely does look cool and does look like a throwback. And I mean that in a good way.
Guys, the more I browse folklore screenshots, the more I realize this is just folklore.
Well, I mean, it also it looks a little bit similar to not The Last Remnant. There are a couple of Lost Odyssey, I think. There are a couple of mid-aughts RPGs that specifically the color palette and a little bit of the architecture design in this does mm-hmm. feel like it harkens back to. But at least over here in the West, that is considered to be kind of a lost era for this kind of RPG, right?
Yeah.
And so, I'm trying to be especially mindful of, not pretending that those games don't exist, I guess, in kind of bringing my, just kind of gut feeling about what I'm seeing here. And I'm saying it does feel like a throwback to those games that a lot of people can, I think, just kind of in our cohort just kind of hopped off the train for, I think.
This is a weird comparison, but it kind of reminded me of Brotherhood of the Wolf, which was a French movie. Not that they look anything the same, but they're uh-huh. both have the thing where it's there's going to be rules for how people dress in this world, and uh-huh. we're not going to explain them, but they're going to look cool, and that's going to be that, you know?
Huh. Yeah. And one of your party members can just float, and they don't use it to fly, but they certainly just float.
They just don't like walking.
I didn't know that was an option.
By citing Brotherhood of the Wolf, Ben, you're going to make people think this looks like Bloodborne.
It's not that. That's why. I did specify that it's not that they look the same, but it's the same kind of rules and mechanisms and framework are in play.
Guys, I was wondering why I hadn't heard of Sandfall before. This is their first game.
Yeah. I was looking to see what else they had, what else the team members had done, but that information is not forthcoming.
Yeah.
I assume they're a French developer.
Well, and they have to, this has to be made up of people who made other stuff based on the fit and polish that I'm seeing on this.
I think the other thing that they pointed out is it's a smaller team as well. It's something 30 some people or something.
30
like
core
that.
Team, but any game like this is going to have a ton of outsourcing people. More discourse than I saw.
I wonder too. So I'm looking at the names of supporters on their website. And it doesn't say supported by the French government, but I wonder if this game got if countries that support the arts can actually have some cool things created.
Oh, absolutely. Ben and I were just talking about this with, games coming out of Denmark. Scandinavia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sweden. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sweden and Finland. Now looking here, on their Wikipedia page, it was founded in 2020 by, Guillaume Roche and Tom Yerman. And Francois Maurice, who were all creative leads at Ubisoft. So they have big studio experience.
Aha. Yeah, the Ubisoft connection, I get.
Yeah.
Impressive that they made this in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on them. It seems it is lit at least the part of the internet that I pay attention to on fire. So,
yeah.
It's
amazing what you can accomplish when you're not. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it was also in Unreal Engine too, which it seems the trend is to use that because mm-hmm. it looks good.
You know, you look at anything like this and you try, I mean, at least I do, I try to think about it and what is the lesson that I hope is taken away from this? Obviously, I haven't played it, but hopefully this puts a little bit of wind in the sails for, original properties that are not very specifically citing something. You know, mm-hmm. given what's happening at EA and stuff, I don't have a lot of faith that the moribund AAA space is going to provide it. And I don't know that I have faith that there is money in the indie space for it, but hopefully this is not just a weird little dead end that happened because of circumstance.
Yeah.
I mean, this and Baldur's Gate 3, just feel like, the hits keep coming and they don't stop coming. So let's go.
Yeah.
More games like this, please.
It's because with Baldur's Gate 3 and The Witcher 3, they have 3 in the title. You know, it's they mm-hmm. had 2 or 3 times to iterate and make it this good. So it's surprising. Yeah. This being their first entry and kind of hitting the ground running like this. But
this is the 33rd.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
For me, that's the only thing that I've got to talk about because it's eaten my life. I don't know about you, Ben.
I got a little bit of one more to talk about. Yep. And the other one is just finishing up with the Blue Prince. I played that for actually the majority of the week until I got Expedition 33. But I kind of hit my wall in the game, mm-hmm. and I kind of crossed the threshold where it's like, all right, I found everything I want to find.
To Wikipedia, to TV Tropes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see what else is in the game. I thought I was like maybe 75 to like 90% done, something like that. Maybe I was like 40% done with the game, maybe like 50%. But I mean, that's only if you see like all the things you can do in the game. Okay. But I don't care to do any of the rest of it because it is hard. And like,
whoa, this is you saying that? Like,
yeah,
you're one of the more like puzzle pilled people that I know when it comes to games, at least.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, this is kind of getting in the realm of, Inscription, where it's like, okay, if you do this and this and this and change this bit on the computer and do this sort of thing, like then this happens. It's like that. But instead of like doing any finicky computer thing, it's like making plans for very specific runs in the blueprints of like trying to get certain rooms or certain combination of rooms in a certain way. I don't want to say anything beyond that because I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's like really into it. But it kind of gets to that point to like progress in certain parts of the story. And so, yeah, this is where I'm fine, like saluting anyone who wants to go down that and stuff. And like, but I'm just hopping off the train where I'm at.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm not trying to criticize the game or say that like I'm upset by like that being there or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Great game. It's going to be hard for there to be a better puzzle game to come out this year, in my opinion. Yeah. Like it's very, I think it's the best puzzle game since The Witness. It's still debatable. I don't think it surpasses The Witness probably, but it's very close, or there could be a conversation about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know how you could give it any higher praise than that. It's like the best game in 10 years. So,
I mean, especially from you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say other people, that would be an insult. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not even like taking a shot at The Witness or my opinions about it. It's more just like, oh, you fucking love that game.
Yeah. Yeah. So love the game. Happy it exists. It's crazy that it invented a new genre within the puzzle space and did it so pitch perfectly. Mm-hmm. I will be very curious to see if the game director makes another game after this. They were a film director before they made this, and this was kind of their passion project. And I watched an interview with them, and they did say there were like two or three other game ideas that they wanted to kind of pursue, but they like buckled down to finish this game before doing it.
Hmm.
So it could be possible they do that. I think the development time for this game for them was maybe on the order of like 6 to 8 years, I think. Hmm. So, so I'd be curious to see what happens with the next. But yeah, 5 out of 5 stars. Recommend it to anyone who likes puzzle games for sure. Great game. I'm done with it. I don't want to play it again for a while. It's kind of like the Satisfactory jogged my memory. Treatment.
Yeah.
Huh?
I said you jogged my memory. I finished all 20 of the challenge runs in Balatro, and I think that's my end point.
Yeah,
for the
game.
Nice.
That's probably enough.
Nothing new to say, but when you're talking about like loved it, reached this milestone, never want to play it again. It's like, I can relate to that.
A good point of comparison, I guess, is Animal Well, for that, where it's like loads of secrets after credits rolling. Some of them feel too obtuse for me to figure out, or like just use a dreidel in every room and every place to see if it uncovers something secret. It's like, I'm good. I'm not going to do that.
That's a little bit too much. That is something that is on the order of a community effort to figure out, not an individual to go and do all that.
Yeah. And I think that may be the difference. Cause like with The Witness, I feel like you could feasibly figure almost everything out in it, or almost all the first level puzzles in it probably. Yeah. So anyway, that's all I got for this week.
Okay. I feel bad because I don't really have much of anything. I had to put a bunch of time into Satisfactory to get credits on that. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that for 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I was going to say, It's not that you don't have anything. You have an hour stream on Patreon that people can go watch to see how much you have in the Satisfactory game.
Yes. You can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And before Ben and I recorded about Satisfactory, we did a little tour. We each did a little tours of our worlds. So you can go take a look at that to kind of, as we're talking about Satisfactory in the game, you can kind of see like what our efforts kind of led up to. I don't know. That was a, like, I think we, like, you mentioned that idea, like, right as I was about to say, like, hey, how do you feel about X, Y, or Z? Like, how do you feel about doing this? So we were, like, right on the same page there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, it's so hard to have a conversation about that game without showing, like, what you've done, you know, and the lessons you've learned. So,
Yeah.
But then also it's, like, fun, too, because it's like a Rorschach where it kind of shows a part of your personality as far as, like, I had my partner watched it and chuckled at you pegging my factory of like, it's going to be jank, but part of it will be good.
I said, I was more kind than that, Ben. I didn't say jank. I said, it probably won't be the prettiest thing, but it will be extremely effective. Yeah. The only other thing that I've been playing in addition to that has been The Last of Us Part Two, but I don't know that I have more to say. It is continuing to be more of that, which is fine and good. The story's keeping me. I do see lots of opportunity for it to maybe cut to the chase a little bit more, but yeah.
You're on a boat right now, right?
I have recently, obtained a boat. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hit Lonely Island song. I have recently obtained a boat.
Yes. Yeah.
I believe you're in the downtown area.
I think I am headed toward a Ferris wheel. I'm going to an aquarium.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. You know, mysteries. I am very curious about, people's motivations and stuff. Some very effective scenes that have kind of rolled out. It's an older game, but also there are people playing it for the first time because of the remaster. There are people who are watching the show, so I don't want to go too in depth on the story details. I do enjoy fighting the Scars. What is it, the Seraphim or whatever they are?
The people who whistle.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of the cultists, the kind of naturalist cultist kind of people. Mm-hmm. That being its own, their own kind of encounter with the way that they coordinate with each other and try to move very stealthily, as opposed to the WLF, who are more about like very explicitly coordinated units and then just kind of barging around and saying exactly what they're going to do. Like the Scars actually will like get up behind you and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, there's not an awful lot new. It's just pretty good stealth gameplay. I do want to like give some flowers to like the actual individual like level and encounter design.
Mm-hmm.
I do not remember, and I've played The Last of Us, the original one, 2-3 times or something like that. Like individual combat arenas were not really anything special to my mind. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of felt like combat hallways and waist high walls and, you know, some opportunities to get the upper hand on somebody, but you know, just pretty indicative of what like a super high budget game would have been at that time here. This actually putting you in pretty well thought out stealth arenas. Mm-hmm. And having a very good kind of guard behavior and AI, all of the, there's a problem with the toilet situations, notwithstanding, actually does bring a lot more interest to this as like a crunchy action game to me than, you know, something that I would associate with being kind of a more cinematic shooter.
It's weird because it's like, it has the, for my money, the best like stealth slash action like experience in any game that I've played. It's just weird, like, because to your earlier point of it being too much, I also feel that at the same way, where it's like, if you just like half the size of the game, maybe it would be like hit have been more impactful or something. But like, it's weird to both be so impressed by a game
and so then exhausted by it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wild.
I also enjoy, and people in the chat confirmed this, it really wasn't a thing that happened in the first game where monsters and humans would interact.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it has happened not as much as I would like, but like when you're in a situation where there are clickers and runners about, being able to sick one on the other is so satisfying. I love that whenever it happens in a game. I loved it back in Doom when you could get the demons to fight each other. I fucking love it here. It does make the world feel much more alive. and I'm happy that they committed to it as much as they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that might be all that I have, unless y'all have more questions about it.
Last of Us Part 3, you're able to sick the dog on their owner. It's the boss fight.
Yeah. Get them.
The dog will yell, Janice, when you kill its owner.
It's super creepy. It's actually the most unsettling thing in the game.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I actually started writing this question before I knew what ludonarrative dissonance was.
Oh.
And discovered the term in the process. So, ludonarrative dissonance is now my favorite kind of dissonance. What games have the biggest juxtaposition between the theme or story and the moment-to-moment gameplay? Does it work, or does it make it harder to suspend disbelief?
That, it's impossible that we haven't talked about this over the course of the time we've been doing this. Like this particular phrase, like that was a buzzword, I think even like 12 years ago.
I'm sure I've heard it
before,
but in my defense, both of those words are very big, and together I just don't think I can be expected to remember them.
But we're talking specifically about times when gameplay and the story or the setup or aesthetic kind of clash with each other. And I will get us started here with Mirko, who says, when a character dies because of reverse plot armor in a Final Fantasy after being, quote, killed and picked back up no worse for wear like 50 times before. They get around that by saying in combat they're just knocked out, which does not necessarily jibe with the fact they're using parts of the phoenix, a bird known for its mystical powers of rebirth, to bring them back.
Yeah, also, I watched a god smash a planet into you. You're dead.
Yeah.
That is dead.
No. And it's just like, oh, they're dead because they just want to stay dead. Like they were doing this like back even as early as Final Fantasy IV. There's a moment when these two, like, you have two like little kid twin mages who, in order to save the party from like these two walls that are crushing, they turn themselves into statues to hold them up. And you have items in your inventory and spells that could heal them. And there's like, oh no, they want to stay statues. You can't heal them if they don't want to.
Oh no.
Yeah. It is a tricky thing. And I don't know that they've ever figured out how to solve that problem.
Remember folks, get consent before using soft.
Yes. I don't even know. Is that something that should be offensive? I don't
know. Let's let the internet figure it out. I'm sure they'll be well-reasoned and gentle in their response.
Consent before everything. Consent for everything, regardless. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ben, what does Warren say?
Warren says, first two that come to mind, food dishes as health items, because it's so silly to imagine someone just devouring a full steak dinner between dodge rolls mid-combat. I would say, see, there will be blood. The other thing they say is when characters explain in VO how to do something, think any tutorial from Metal Gear takes me right out of a scene.
Now, I mean, a famous example of people talking about this, I say, 12, 13 years ago, because this was a huge thing around BioShock Infinite, was like, okay, they're trying to, sell you on the stakes of this world or whatever, but my dude is stopping in the middle of fights to eat trash hot dogs in order to recover health. And it's like, it's not.
That made me relate to the character, honestly.
Yeah.
Just got to gruffle some garbage dogs. It's fine. It's
honestly the most American thing about that setting.
Dennis, what does Callum say?
Callum says, while I love Cyberpunk 2077, the main story has a ticking clock on V. Yet, I spent a lot of time exploring Night City at my leisure.
Fair.
Yeah, I tell you what, in any game where it's like, oh no, we gotta go, like, or, things are gonna get real bad, I try to lean in and, mm-hmm. and like, okay, well, I better hurry through this area. And almost 100% of the time it punishes you for actually acting like the plot implies you should act.
Yes. Or like in Cyberpunk, it leads to these situations where if you play it like, you know, somebody who plays a bunch of RPGs, you're going to be doing a bunch of side stuff. And the, you know, the clock that's on V has to do with a sickness that they have. And the sickness only manifests, like you only get symptoms of it when you're in main quests. So it's like you've gone and done all of these wacky adventures hacking around this city. And then because you're doing all of these main quests in a row, like your health is just like fallen apart instantly.
It brings a whole new meaning to the phrase main character syndrome.
Yes.
It is more pronounced than something like a GTA 3 or something like that, where you could have it make sense in the world that everyone was doing something else for a week.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Billy Manjuice says, and this might have been my answer if nobody brought it, Stardew Valley being hailed as the anti-capitalist savior of the town while low-key stacking millions. Made worse when I routinely deliver 2 bottles of wine to Leah per week until she marries me. It's not even like the anti-capitalist kind of side of it. Cause like, I don't know. I don't even think that it especially like makes a critique of capitalism. I think that, you know, the beginning setup is more about like, oh, I work at this anonymous corporation and, you know, the life became a prison. And so I sought a place where, you know, I could live kind of differently. I don't think that my pursuit of stacking up the millions is, you know, goes up against the message of the game. I think that specifically the way that I play Stardew Valley, the fact that I turn into a different kind of machine, because that's the way that I like to play the game, you know, just absolutely exploiting the farm and maximizing everything that I can, because that's how I play that game. And that is how I relax in it. It is less that the game is like that. It's just that the way that I choose to engage with it does clang with this idea that it is supposed to be this, you know, chance to reset into this more pastoral kind of life. Right.
Yeah. It's a cozy hustle grind set.
Yeah, yeah.
It reminds me, I had a conversation with a friend about the game, and I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to put it down because I've like done all these tech trees. There's nothing else I can do. And they're like, well, you could just like have fun. You can just like wake up and do whatever you want in the game if you want. Like, you don't have to like do all the – it's like, oh.
No.
I didn't realize. What?
But I like goals. Like, games can have – like, I like it when games have goals. Let's see, Ben, what does Threnza say?
Threnza says, the cute music and whimsical childlike art style of Yoshi's Island belies the fact that you are committing mass murder while trying to prevent the abduction of a child long before The Last of Us was even a twinkle in someone's eye. It doesn't bother me, but you do devour lots of sentient creatures.
And turn them into your ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. I didn't think of The Last of Us comparison, but you're right, Threnza.
Can't wait for that HBO show.
Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, in Monster Hunter, you usually have around 100 HP. So when the giant dragon hits you with a fireball and sends you flying, it usually does like 20 to 30 points of damage. It doesn't take me out of the moment, but the difference in visual versus damage is funny.
I blame other games that tend to have damage in like the 10,000s in order to make it feel huge. Like that is more of a... a concern of video games at large than just Monster Hunter.
Yeah, the number bloat is real.
Yes. Let's see. Brain in a Bowl says, Morrowind, the theme. I'm a deadly assassin traversing rooftops to kill enemies with the lethal poisons I made myself from the deadliest plants. The play, I'm skipping through fields, picking flowers. this being an Elder Scrolls game, any dissonance only enhances the play. What else are you gonna make the poisons out of? Mm-hmm. You know, you're gonna get flowers. Where are those flowers? Probably gonna be in a field. What's the best way to get around a field? You prance. It's fine.
So sorry, I'm min-maxing my poison creation here.
And Ben, how about Hurricane Belushi?
Hurricane Belushi says, damn near every RPG ever. By the end of the game, my party are living gods, decider of fates, steamroller of foes. No one can stop us. Oh, and the battle ended and the villain stabbed me. I've been stabbed at this point in the battle, conversely, 2,500 times. I am now clinging to life.
Yeah. Just a different version of what Mirko said at the beginning, right? Just like, you know, my characters are shooting everybody all the time, but then, you know, a person who matters, a person with a name shoots me. Although that's a very conceptual thing. Your weapons are only deadly if you're important enough to have a name.
Mm. Yeah. Huh. Oh, I like that.
Ooh, I can get meta. Yeah. Huh.
You could actually have some really fun stuff around that with like a relationship system in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The better you get to know a character, the more deadly they are against you.
Yeah.
I was going to say Black Mirror quality is tanking right now, so we could workshop a new episode with this.
Yeah, sure. I've heard Black Mirror this new season was okay.
Maybe it's a personal taste then. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with your taste. I haven't seen it. I just
not enough pig fucking for you.
Yeah.
What? Oh,
bring back the pig pilot.
Oh, that's right, because they did they predicted the James Cam, not the James Cameron. that's a scoop.
Wait, hold on.
They predict the David Cameron thing.
Yeah. What's the new Avatar movie going to be like?
Avatar, a machine for pigs. yeah. As uninspired as it is, the Stardew thing was literally the only thing that I brought. Yeah, Ben, how about you?
You're allowed to think the same thing as someone else.
Yeah.
I got a favorite one, which is the Arkham games, where they make such a point of Batman not killing anyone, but boy, does he concuss a lot of people.
Yeah.
His hospitals are running over with his work. So
you throw a lot of people off of the side of a building.
Yeah. Who knows what happens at the bottom?
Yeah.
I'm not going to check.
It's gravity does the killing. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, the one that came to mind for me was Diablo, where the theme is that, you know, horrible demon hordes and summoning these eldritch forces and you know, blood and carnage everywhere. And then if you stop and actually look what you're doing, it's just a fun little bopping button, zipping around kind of deal. Like extremely breezy gameplay.
Yeah.
Covered in blood, though.
Yeah. God, does Diablo 4 still have the orbs? The health and the mana orb?
Yeah, they're on the bottom of the screen.
Yeah,
screen just, camped out as ever.
When we were doing Diablo 2 for Watch Out for Fireballs, you know, I think last winter maybe. I was kind of sick of it, and whenever I would say like to Gary, like, oh, I've got to go play more Diablo 2, I would say I've got to go babysit the orbs, because like the entire game was just like, okay, red orb's low, okay, fill up the red orb. Well, blue orb's low now, got to fill up the blue orb. All right, red orb's getting low again.
that's hilarious, because literally 90% of the builds that I use in Diablo are figure out how you don't have to worry about the mana orb.
Oh, okay.
Like just find a way that I am not managing mana.
Mm.
That when I press a button, it is always going to do the thing, and I never have to think about how full my mana is. So I feel your pain.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. Well, thank you everybody, for, writing in. If you have thoughts about these, go to follow us on Blue Sky. That is thelevelpodcast.bsky.social. And thank you, Dennis, for posting these, on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about what's happening in the world of video games and how we feel about it. Dennis, you have some follow-up on a story we previously talked about.
Yeah, so everyone remembers Flappy Bird, was on everybody's phone about 10 years ago, and then was abruptly yanked off by the creator, Dong Nguyen, maybe over some plagiarized gameplay design allegations, maybe over just concerns that, hey, this has gotten really big and I wasn't expecting that and people seem to be addicted to it. I'll just pull it down.
No.
And so, you know, it disappeared from the public eye. And a little bit ago, we heard it might be coming back in the absolute worst way possible, as some kind of crypto game. Yeah, monetized. Web 3.0. So This is a feel-good story, though, because now the actual release is upon us, and they have gone over and above to emphasize not only does the game not have any of that crypto crap in it, but the game will, quote, never have any Web3 elements.
Okay.
The one sad thing is that apparently the original creator is not still involved with this. It was a trademark that was let expire and then, you know, picked back up by someone else to continue along. So fine, a trademark law is weird.
Yeah.
But a massive win for people putting their foot down and saying, like, no, we will not have you shoving crypto down our throats. And you know, Web3 has officially ceased to be any kind of positive association with games.
That has been one of the more spiriting things about, I think, the reaction to specifically AI stuff, but also crypto. A lot of things like this is that, like, as much as the people who are boosting it want you to believe it, none of this is inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really is. In fact, it seems, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it really is like proof is in the pudding, you know, where it's like Baldur's Gate 3 is amazing because it's an amazing game. You know, like, crypto sucks because it's not fun. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it really does just show publishers like Square Enix really just being caught with their pants down that they seem to like go in on it. And, you know, Ubisoft with AI creation kind of stuff, right? Like, you know, put glibly, bullying works. You know, you can make your displeasure with this known loud enough that they pull back. But
bullying upwards works.
Yes. Yeah.
It is a fascinating glimpse. I mean, I feel like crypto's kind of been dead for a while. Once in a while, it rears its ugly head. But
it's specifically all moved over to AI.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, right. The huckster side of it has definitely, you know, the big investment money is AI right now. But also, like, crypto has been so, I mean, like, mainstreamed because everybody in the White House is doing a crypto scam. Like, it is, the scam economy has kind of been fully embraced. So it is, like, just purely in the realm of kind of, like, semi-official grift now. Whereas I think AI is something that people desperately want to make a thing because otherwise there are no other ideas.
Well, what I was going to say is this fascinating glimpse into corporate culture where I feel like Web3 and crypto got as big as it did, partly because, you know, everyone at the company wanted to be the first one to have something to say about the hot new thing. Mm-hmm. And just counted on other people not really understanding or not being willing to say the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably to some extent on that bubble with AI as well.
It is kind of funny. So, the similarity between the culprit and the victim and these things are both people just want to get rich quick.
Yeah.
Who's going to grift?
Do you know how fortunate, how fucking lucky I feel that I got out of the job, that I got laid off at the job that I had before crypto and before AI, before NFTs became a thing? For people who are listening or aren't aware, the job that I worked at, I was like a creative lead at a company that made animated videos explaining mostly like tech products, right? Mm-hmm. Had big clients, had small clients, et cetera. But like whatever was the big technology du jour, we had a ton of videos in, whether it was, cloud compute, whether it was the Internet of Things. This is dating me, but, like, you know, we went through all of those. Tons of, like, you know, ad tech before it became ubiquitous came through and had me writing fucking propaganda for it. And the fact that, like, when I got laid off was around the time, like, you know, pretty much every third pitch I was brought in because I person who understood crypto, but I was also the person who knew specifically how the client was lying.
Yes. Don't say this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like sitting in story meetings saying like, hey, I don't know that I can give you an idea of how to explain this, but like here's what's going on and here's what they don't want you to say. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, just the I shudder to think at what they're making videos for now. Not that it was an especially bad company for that particular reason. They took the clients they had, but Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's when I did innovation consulting. It was I think around a similar time, a little delayed maybe, but it was every company wanting to innovate around around crypto specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's like how many times do I take the project or do I calmly explain that it's all bullshit and thinking about it. Like the proper way to think about it is to don't get involved with the grift.
Yeah.
But we're going on about that. It's Flappy Bird escaped it somehow.
Yeah.
they just have a good old fashioned, honest, free to play microtransaction model.
Fine. honestly, fine.
Yeah.
I have one, I didn't feel like talking about the EA layoffs because we don't have all the details about that right now.
Yeah.
That is a bummer. It was just never try to make a Titanfall game because apparently they don't want to be made like cosmically.
Oh, it's cursed.
Yeah. No, but I've got one that just kind of popped up. There is a game in the works called Mold Washer that is, 2D pixel art, power washing sim, where you're playing as a little piece of sushi, power washing the inside of a refrigerator.
This sounds like a game that was made up by AI.
Kind of. And, I don't like that it's a little piece of sushi. Why is the sushi concerned about the cleanliness of other food? Does the sushi not also rot?
Mm-hmm. Is it pissing?
It looks like
it's got a hose. It's not connected to anything.
It's got a little gun. I just think that it's very cute, and I'm curious about how a 2D iteration of a power wash game will play.
Mm. Well, so you're saying 2D. It's kind of like isometric with a fixed camera.
Yes, 2D sprite art. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, you can't like get behind something to check out.
Yeah. And you're chasing flies around too. I'm just curious. The art style looks cute. I would not have thought to make that, but wait a minute. This isn't this is the first I noticed this. Somebody also made a strategy sim set inside of a fridge called Listeria Wars.
Oh no.
Yeah, there's no release date on this yet, but I just I don't know, because I'm a power washing pervert, I was this caught my attention.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it, you know, indie cool pixel art power washing, this is kind of sniping you.
I mean, a little bit. Yeah. So just want to, it's kind of a thing will eventually exist, but it caught my eye. And as Ben has discovered, it's kind of a slow news week, other than horrible layoffs that we don't know everything about yet. So,
yeah.
Yep. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Let's button.
Let's go play Expedition 33.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 541 of The Level. If you want to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Even free members can see the factory tours up there on the VOD of the stream that Ben and I did. So go check that out. Also go check out the satisfactory episode of Watch Out for Fireballs if you like Ben. If you like the energy that Ben brings and you want to hear us talk about
this. You can hate listen as well if you want.
Yeah, that's fine. I'd rather you only listen. I only want people to do things that they like to do, especially if they're being kind enough to listen. So
fair.
Yes. But otherwise, you can leave a rating or review for this show or other shows, and you can tell your friends. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No. All right. Kind to each other. It's scary out there.
Yes, please. Please be kind. I have been K Ross. I am on Blue Sky under my dead name. I need to fix that. I need to get a custom URL. I'm just trying to decide which one's going to be the funniest.
I am Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, what do we got?
I just got one.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Cease to accept titles after that, but I don't feel so good, Monsieur Stark.
Yes.
Okay.
I wrote that down as well.
I put a lot of vowels in there too. I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah. I don't know how to spell. I'm just going to take it on faith that I will. I will take it on faith that I caught that. So both of you had, I don't feel so good, Monsieur Stark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. What else you have, Dennis?
One other, I had a cozy hustle grind set.
I don't feel so good, Monsieur Stark. I didn't have any.
Yeah, that one's a layup.
Yeah. All right. It is decided.